So this next section is what Ajahn Sujito calls inquiry and commitment. And this as a, I think is an important part of application of energy and putting forth effort, is that there's a, and actually one in the inquiry into what it entails and what the purpose of it is and what the whole path is, and then to actually hunker down and make a commitment to that kind of that practice, that training. And he begins with a prologue, or getting it straight, so that there's a sense of this is, begins with establishing a right view, so that really to say begin a proper inquiry and to make a decent commitment, then one's views need to be straightened and or have to be established in an appropriate way in order to facilitate proper effort and proper results of one's effort, and so that attention to views is an important piece of the picture. The first. There'll be a bunch of short sutta quotes. The first one is, say, right view as basis. And this is from Anguttara 1's 17. Bhikkhus, I see no other condition which is so much for the arising of as yet unarisen unskillful states, and for the development and fruition of unskillful states already arisen, as wrong view. Because I see no other condition which is so much for the arising of as yet unarisen skillful conditions, and for the development and fruition of skillful states already arisen, as right view. Because when there is wrong view, bodily kamma created as a result of that view, verbal kamma created as a result of that view, as well as intentions, aspirations, wishes, and mental proliferations are all productive of results that are undesirable, unpleasant, disagreeable, yielding no benefit, but conducive to suffering. The opposite would be true, of course, as well. When there is right view, whatever kamma that's created as a result of that view, by body, verbal, as well as intentions, aspirations, wishes, mental proliferations, they're all productive of results that are desirable, are pleasant, are agreeable, yielding benefit, and conducive to the ending of suffering. This next discourse is also from the Anguttara 1's 15. Suttas 1 to 3. What is impossible? It is impossible, O monks, and it cannot be that a person possessed of right view should regard any formation as permanent. But it is possible for an uninstructed worldling to regard a formation as permanent. It is impossible, O monks, and it cannot be that a person possessed of right view should regard any formation as a source of happiness. But it is possible for an uninstructed worldling to regard a formation as a source of happiness. It is impossible, O monks, and it cannot be that a person possessed of right view should regard anything as a self. But it is possible for an uninstructed worldling to regard something as a self. This next is what is called Four Occasions for Diligence. This is the Anguttara 4's, Sutta number 116. To form others, O monks, diligence should be applied. What for? You should give up bad conduct in deeds and cultivate good conduct in deeds. Do not be negligent in that. You should give up bad conduct in speech and cultivate good conduct in speech. Do not be negligent in that. You should give up bad conduct in thought and cultivate good conduct in thought. Do not be negligent in that. You should give up wrong view and cultivate right view. Do not be negligent in that. If a monk has given up bad conduct in deed, speech, and thought, and has cultivated good conduct in deed, speech, and thought, he has given up wrong view and cultivated right view, he need not fear death in a future existence. This next is called the Five Helpers of Right View. It's from the Anguttara Fives, Sutta number 25. Right view, O monks, if it is helped by five things, has liberation of mind as its fruit, and is rewarded by the fruit of liberation of mind. It has liberation by wisdom as its fruit, and is rewarded by the fruit of liberation by wisdom. What are those five things? Here, monks, right view is helped by virtue, by wide learning, by discussion of what was learned, by tranquility, and by insight. Right view is helped by virtue, by wide learning, by discussion of what was learned, by tranquility, and by insight. Virtue would be sila, wide learning would be bahusutta. Wide learning, wide knowledge, discussion of what was learned, probably dhamma sankaccha. That's one of the things of great blessing. Eta mangala muttamam. Tranquility be samatha, insight would be vipassana. And it's interesting also that you think back in the sutta that the monks who were with Anuruddha and what their sort of schedule was. They were in retreat, and then every several days they would gather together for discussion of the Dhamma. They didn't get together to discuss what they had for the meal. It was discussion on the Dhamma. But that discussion, reflection, stimulates further reflection. Next one is called Advice to New Monks. On one occasion, the Blessed One, and this is Anguttara Fives, Sutta number 114. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Magadhans at Andakavinda. Then the Venerable Ananda approached the Blessed One, and the Blessed One said to him, "Ananda, those monks who are newcomers, who have recently gone forth and have just come to this Dhamma discipline, should be exhorted, settled, and established by you in five things. What five? Come, friends, be virtuous, dwell restrained by the restraint of the Patimokkha, perfect in conduct and resort, seeing danger in the slightest faults. Having undertaken the training rules, train yourselves in them. Thus they should be exhorted, settled, and established in the restraint of the Patimokkha. Come, friends, dwell guarding the doors of the sense faculties, with mindfulness as guard, with discerning mindfulness, with a well-protected mind, with a mind maintaining mindfulness. Thus they should be exhorted, settled, and established in the restraint of the sense faculties. Come, friends, do not talk much, place limits on your talking. Thus they should be exhorted, settled, and established in limitation on talking. Come, friends, be forest dwellers. Resort to remote lodgings in the forests and woodlands. Thus they should be exhorted, settled, and established in bodily withdrawal. Come, friends, be of right view, of right perspective. Thus they should be exhorted, settled, and established in right perspective. Those monks, Ananda, who are newcomers, who have recently gone forth and have just come to this Dhamma and discipline, should be exhorted, settled, and established by you in these five things. So he discourse in from the Samyutta Nikaya, Samyutta 11, Sutta number 14, and illustrating results of right view. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Rajagaha in the bamboo grove, the squirrel sanctuary. There the Blessed One addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Bhikkhus." "Venerable Sir," those bhikkhus replied. The Blessed One said this, "Bhikkhus, once in the past in this same Rajagaha, there was a poor man, a pauper, an indigent. He undertook faith, virtue, learning, generosity and wisdom in the Dhamma and discipline proclaimed by the Tathagata. Having done so, with the breakup of the body after death, he was reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world, in the company of the Tavatimsa Devas, where he outshone the other Devas in regard to beauty and glory. Thereupon the Tavatimsa Devas found fault with this, grumbled and complained about it, saying, 'It is wonderful indeed, sir. It is amazing indeed, sir. For formerly, when this young Deva was a human being, he was a poor man, a pauper, an indigent. Yet with the breakup of the body after death, he has been reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world, in the company of the Tavatimsa Devas, where he outshines the other Devas in regard to beauty and glory.' Then Bhikkhus, Sakka, Lord of the Devas, addressed the Tavatimsa Devas thus, 'Dear sirs, do not find fault with this young Deva. Formerly, when this young Deva was a human being, he undertook faith, virtue, learning, generosity and wisdom in the Dhamma and discipline proclaimed by the Tathagata. Having done so with the breakup of the body after death, he has been reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world, in the company of the Tathagata Devas, where he outshines the other Devas in regard to beauty and glory.' Then Bhikkhus, instructing the Tavatimsa Devas, Sakka, Lord of the Devas, on that occasion recited these verses. 'When one has faith in the Tathagata, unshakable and well established, and good conduct built on virtue, dear to the noble ones and praised, when one has confidence in the Sangha and one's view is straightened out, they say that one isn't poor, one's life is not lived in vain. Therefore, the person of intelligence, remembering the Buddha's teaching, should be devoted to faith and virtue, to confidence and vision of the Dhamma.'" That was a delightful sutta. Even the devas get a bit huffy when somebody outdoes them. This next sutta sort of takes right view, I think, up another notch in terms of reflection and its function and result. This is the Samyutta 12, Sutta number 15. It's Tukachana Gota. At Savati, then the Venerable Kachana Gota approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side and said to him, "Venerable Sir, it is said, right view, right view. In what way, Venerable Sir, is there right view? This world, Kachana, for the most part depends upon a duality, upon the notion of existence and the notion of non-existence. But for one who sees the origin of the world as it really is with correct wisdom, there is no notion of non-existence in regard to the world. And for one who sees the cessation of the world as it really is with correct wisdom, there is no notion of existence in regard to the world. This world, Kachana, is for the most part shackled by engagement, clinging, and adherence. But this one with right view does not become engaged and cling, Through that engagement and clinging, mental standpoint, adherence, underlying tendency, he does not take a stand about, quote, myself, unquote. He has no perplexity or doubt that what arises is only suffering arising, what ceases is only suffering ceasing. His knowledge about this is independent of others. It is in this way, Kachana, that there is right view. All exists, Kachana, this is one extreme. All does not exist, this is the second extreme. Without veering towards either of these extremes, the Tathagata teaches the Dhamma by the middle. With ignorance as condition, volitional formations come to be. With volitional formations as condition, consciousness comes to be. And so I'm going through the whole dependent origination sequence. Such is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. But with the remainderless fading away and cessation of ignorance comes cessation of volitional formations. With the cessation of volitional formations, cessation of consciousness. And through to the end of the sequence, such is the cessation of this whole mass of suffering. So there you have the whole teaching of the Buddha, sort of in liberation. It's also a sutta that is purported to be used by forms the seed of Nagarjuna's treatise on the middle way, the Madhyamakarika. That's not it. Something anyway. Huh? Madhyamakarika. Anyway, so that's his treatise on the middle way. And it's actually mentioned in that in the treatise. So that these aspects of right view is both on a, and the Buddha talks about that in terms of the right view on a worldly sense is that sequence on the there being mother, father, this world, that next world, results of actions, there's the results of this, that which is given, that which is done. There are beings who recruit, who can cultivate purity. And so that in all sense on a worldly view of seeing that is it. And then on the Lokutra plane or the transcendent level, the Buddha usually talks of right view as coming from the understanding of the Four Noble Truths. So the, say, fundamental right view is more around the karma and results of karma, the how things function in the world. And then what is the way out is the transcendent view. And this is certainly... well, it probably encompasses both in the sense that, but more, much more on a transcendent level. That sense of realizing how the mind keeps swinging back and forth between them. This really is, it really is this way, can't be any other way. And then swinging the other way of. It's never going to be right. It's never going to happen. It shouldn't be this way. It's all hopeless. And that swing back and forth. And that's what was created through that, say, engagement, clinging, adherence. Yeah. Sutta from the Samyutta Nikaya, Samyutta 56, Sutta number 37, sort of the importance of right view. Because this is the forerunner and precursor of the rising of the sun, that is the dawn. So too bhikkhus, for a bhikkhu, this is the forerunner and precursor of the breakthrough to the Four Noble Truths as they really are, that is, right view. It is to be expected that a bhikkhu with right view will understand as it really is, this is suffering. It is to be expected that a bhikkhu with right view will understand as it really is, this is the cause of suffering. It is to be expected that a bhikkhu with right view will understand as it really is, this is the cessation of suffering. It is to be expected that a bhikkhu with right view will understand as it really is, this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. Therefore, bhikkhus, an exertion should be made to understand, this is suffering, this is the cause of suffering, this is the cessation of suffering. An exertion should be made to understand, this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. This is another sutta, sort of illustrating the sort of straightening of views. This is Samyutta 47, sutta number 15. The discourse is given to Bahiya, and it's not the Bahiya who was enlightened very quickly by the hearing the very short discourse from the Buddha and then went off to get his robes and was gored by a cow and died. This is a different Bahiya. At Savati, then the Venerable Bahiya approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side and said to him, Venerable Sir, it would be good if the Blessed One would teach me the Dhamma in brief, so that, having heard the Dhamma from the Blessed One, I might dwell alone, withdrawn, diligent, ardent, and resolute. Well then, Bahiya, purify the very starting point of wholesome states. And what is the starting point of wholesome states? Virtue that is well purified, and view that is straight. Then, Bahiya, when your virtue is well purified, and your view is straight, based upon virtue, established upon virtue, you should develop the four establishments of mindfulness. So then the Buddha then just teaches them the four foundations of mindfulness, and briefly. And then, well, Bahiya, based upon virtue, established upon virtue, you develop these four establishments of mindfulness in such a way, then whether night or day comes, you may expect only growth in wholesome states, not decline. Then the Venerable Bahiya, having delighted and rejoiced in the Blessed One's word, rose from his seat, and after paying homage to the Blessed One, keeping him on his right, he departed. Then, dwelling alone, withdrawn, diligent, ardent, and resolute, the Venerable Bahiya, by realizing it for himself with direct knowledge in his very life, entered and dwelled in that unsurpassed goal of the holy life, for the sake of which clansmen rightly go forth from the household life into homelessness. He directly knew, destroyed his birth, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done. There is no more for this state of being. And the Venerable Bahiya became one of the Arahants. There's also something that characterized Ajahn Chah's teaching, people that kept, throughout his teaching career, he was always emphasizing sila and samadhiti. Those are the fundamental basis of his teaching. Okay, so the next is going past sort of the straightening of views and then moving into sort of doing it, sort of looking and leaping, and establishing an inquiry into how do I go about it, what am I doing. And the discourse that I read now is the Anguttara 3's Sutta number 65. Of course, this is a famous discourse to the Kalamas, the Kalama Sutta. Kalama Sutta. And it's actually, this is such a well-known sutta that it's good to pay attention closely, so that it's easy to tune out if something's really well-known. But there's some really important points of Dhamma in this. There is a reason why it is so famous. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was wandering on tour together with a large sangha of monks when he arrived at a town of the Kalamas named Kesaputta. Now the Kalamas of Kesaputta heard. It is said that the ascetic Gotama, the Sakyan son who went forth from the Sakyan family, has arrived at Kesaputta. Now a good report about that master Gotama has been circulating thus. That Blessed One is an Arahant, fully enlightened, accomplished in true knowledge and conduct, sublime, knower of the worlds, unsurpassed leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of devas and humans, the enlightened one, the blessed one. He makes known this world with its devas, with Mara, with Brahma, this generation with its ascetics and Brahmins, with its devas and humans, having realized it through his own direct knowledge. He teaches a Dhamma that is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. With the right meaning and expression, he reveals a holy life that is perfectly complete and purified. Now it is good to see Arahants such as this. Then the Kalamas of Kesaputta approached the Blessed One. Some paid homage to him and sat down to one side. Some exchanged greetings with him, and after their greetings and cordial talk, sat down to one side. Some saluted him reverentially and sat down to one side. Some remained silent and sat down to one side. Then the Kalama said to the Blessed One, "There are, Lord, some ascetics and Brahmins who come to Kesaputta. They explain and elucidate their own doctrines, but disparage, debunk, revile, and vilify the doctrines of others. But then some other ascetics and Brahmins come to Kesaputta, and they too explain and elucidate their own doctrines, but disparage, debunk, revile, and vilify the doctrines of the others. For us, Lord, there is perplexity and doubt as to which of these good ascetics speak truth and which speak falsehood. It is fitting for you to be perplexed, O Kalamas. It is fitting for you to be in doubt. Doubt has arisen in you about a perplexing matter. Come, Kalamas, do not go by oral tradition, by lineage of teaching, by hearsay, by a collection of scriptures, by logical reasoning, by inferential reasoning, by reflection on reasons, by the acceptance of a view after pondering it, by the seeming competence of a speaker, or because you think the ascetic is our teacher. But when you know for yourselves, these things are unwholesome, these things are blamable, these things are censured by the wise, these things, if undertaken and practiced, lead to harm and suffering, then you should abandon them. What do you think, Kalamas? When greed, hatred, and delusion arise in a person, is it for his welfare or harm? For his harm, Lord. Kalamas, a person who is greedy, hating, and deluded, overpowered by greed, hatred, and delusion, his thoughts controlled by them, will destroy life, take what is not given, engage in sexual misconduct, and tell lies. He will also prompt others to do likewise. Will that conduce to his harm and suffering for a long time? Yes, Lord. What do you think, Kalamas? Are these things wholesome or unwholesome? Unwholesome, Lord. Blamable or blameless? Blamable, Lord. Censured or praised by the wise? Censured, Lord. Undertaken and practiced, do they lead to harm and suffering or not? Or how is it in this case? Undertaken and practiced, these things lead to harm and suffering. So it appears to us in this case. It was for this reason, Kalamas, that we said, do not go by oral tradition, and so on through it all again. Come, Kalamas, do not go by oral tradition, by lineage of teaching, by hearsay, by a collection of scriptures, by logical reasoning, by inferential reasoning, by reflection on reasons, by the acceptance of a view after pondering it, by the seeming competence of a speaker, or because you think the ascetic is our teacher. But when you know for yourselves, these things are wholesome, these things are blameless, these things are praised by the wise, these things, if undertaken and practiced, lead to welfare and happiness, then you should engage in them. What do you think, Kalamas? When non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion arise in a person, is it for his welfare or harm? For his welfare, Lord. Kalamas, a person who is without greed, without hatred, without delusion, not overpowered by greed, hatred, and delusion, his thoughts not controlled by them, will abstain from the destruction of life, from taking what is not given, from sexual misconduct, and from false speech. He will also prompt others to do likewise. Will that conduce to his welfare and happiness for a long time? Yes, Lord. What do you think, Kalamas? Are these things wholesome or unwholesome? Wholesome, Lord. Blamable or blameless? Blameless, Lord. Censured or praised by the wise? Praised, Lord. Undertaken and practiced, do they lead to welfare and happiness or not? Or how is it in this case? Undertaken and practiced, these things lead to welfare and happiness. So it appears to us in this case. It was for this reason, Kalamas, that we said, do not go upon oral tradition, and so on. Then, Kalamas, that noble disciple, devoid of covetousness, devoid of ill will, unconfused, clearly comprehending, ever mindful, dwells pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness, likewise the second quarter, the third, and the fourth. Thus above, below, across, and everywhere, and to all as to himself, he dwells pervading the entire world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, vast, exalted, measureless, without hostility, and without ill will. He dwells pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with compassion, with altruistic joy, with equanimity. Likewise the second quarter, third, and the fourth. Thus above, below, across, and everywhere, and to all as to himself, he dwells pervading the entire world with a mind imbued with equanimity, vast, exalted, measureless, without hostility and without ill will. When, Kalamas, this noble disciple has thus made his mind free of enmity, free of ill will, uncorrupted and pure, he has won four assurances in his very life. The first assurance he has won is this: if there is another world, and if good and bad deeds bear fruit and yield results, it is possible that with the breakup of the body after death, I shall arise in a good destination, in a heavenly world. The second assurance he has won is this: if there is no other world, and if good and bad deeds do not bear fruit and yield results, still, right here in this very life, I live happily, free of enmity and ill will. The third assurance he has won is this: suppose evil befalls the evildoer, then, as I do not intend evil for anyone, how can suffering afflict me, one who does no evil deed? The fourth assurance he has won is this: suppose evil does not befall the evildoer, then right here I see myself purified in both respects. When, Kalamas, this noble disciple has thus made his mind free of enmity, free of ill will, uncorrupted and pure, he has won these four assurances in this very life. So it is, blessed one, so it is, sublime one, when this noble disciple has thus made his mind free of enmity, free of ill will, uncorrupted and pure, he has won these four assurances in this very life. Excellent, Lord, excellent. Let the Blessed One accept us as lay followers who have gone for refuge from today until life's end. So. It says, next one is from the Anguttara Sixes, Sutta number 88. And it says, endowed with these six qualities, a person is incapable of alighting on the lawfulness, the rightness of skillful mental qualities, even when listening to the true Dhamma. Which six? When the doctrine and discipline declared by the Tathagata is being taught, he does not listen well, does not give ear, does not apply his mind to knowledge, grabs hold of what is worthless, rejects what is worthwhile, and is not endowed with the patience to conform with the teaching. And then the converse, of course, expresses the capabilities. Endowed with these six qualities, a person is capable of alighting on the lawfulness, the rightness of skillful mental qualities, even when listening to the true Dhamma. When the doctrine and discipline declared by the Tathagata is being taught, he listens well, he gives ear, he applies his mind to knowledge, grabs hold of what is worthwhile, rejects what is worthless, and is endowed with the patience to conform with the teaching. This next one, in terms of inquiry, is this sutta is the Majjhima 41, the Brahmins of Sala, and by questioning the Buddha, the Brahmins of Sala sort of find out. That by aligning oneself with, in accordance with Dhamma, what one sets one's goals and one's heart on can be accomplished. So the Brahmins of Sala sort of go to meet the Buddha and question him, and then they're not certain, they don't understand the detailed meaning of what the Buddha is pointing to, and then he continues to explain. Householders, there are three kinds of bodily conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma: unrighteous conduct. There are four kinds of verbal conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma: unrighteous conduct. There are three kinds of mental conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma: unrighteous conduct. And how, householders, are there three kinds of bodily conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma: unrighteous conduct? Here someone kills living beings, he is murderous, bloody-handed, given to blows and violence, merciless to living beings. He takes what is not given, he takes by way of theft the wealth and property of others in the village or forest. He misconducts himself in sensual pleasures, he has intercourse with women who are protected by their mother, father, mother and father, brother, sister, or relatives, who have a husband, who are protected by law, and even with those who are garlanded in token of betrothal. That is how there are three kinds of bodily conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma: unrighteous conduct. And how, householders, are there four kinds of verbal conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma: unrighteous conduct? Here someone speaks falsehood. When summoned to a court, or to a meeting, or to his relative's presence, or to his guild, or to the royal family's presence, and questioned as a witness thus, "So, good man, tell what you know." Not knowing, he says, "I know." Or knowing, he says, "I do not know." Not seeing, he says, "I see." Or seeing, he says, "I do not see." In full awareness, he speaks falsehood for his own ends, or for another's ends, or for some trifling worldly end. He speaks maliciously. He repeats elsewhere what he has heard here in order to divide those people from these. Or he repeats to these people what he has heard elsewhere in order to divide these people from those. Thus he is one who divides those who are united, a creator of divisions, who enjoys discord, rejoices in discord, delights in discord, a speaker of words that create discord. He speaks harshly. He utters such words as are rough, hard, hurtful to others, offensive to others, bordering on anger, unconducive to concentration. He is a gossip. He speaks at the wrong time, speaks what is not fact, speaks what is useless, speaks contrary to the Dhamma and the discipline. At the wrong time, he speaks such words as are worthless, unreasonable, immoderate, and unbeneficial. That is how there are four kinds of verbal conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma, unrighteous conduct. And how, householders, are there three kinds of mental conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma, unrighteous conduct. Here someone is covetous. He covets the wealth and property of others, thus, "Oh, may what belongs to another be mine." Or he has a mind of ill will and intentions of hate, thus, "May these beings be slain and slaughtered, may they be cut off, perish, or be annihilated." Or he has wrong view, distorted vision, thus, "There is nothing given, nothing offered, nothing sacrificed, no fruit or result of good and bad actions, no this world, no other world, no mother, no father, no beings who are reborn spontaneously, no good and virtuous recluses and Brahmins in the world who have themselves realized by direct knowledge and declare this world and the other world." That is how there are three kinds of mental conduct, not in accordance with the Dhamma, unrighteous conduct. So, householders, it is by reason of such conduct, not in accordance with the Dhamma, by reason of such unrighteous conduct, that some beings here on the dissolution of the body after death reappear in states of deprivation, in an unhappy destination, in perdition, even in hell. Householders, there are three kinds of bodily conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct. There are four kinds of verbal conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct. There are three kinds of mental conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct. And how, householders, are there three kinds of bodily conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct? Here someone, abandoning the killing of living beings, abstains from killing living beings. With rod and weapon laid aside, gentle and kindly, he abides compassionate to all living beings. Abandoning the taking of what is not given, he abstains from taking what is not given. He does not take by way of theft the wealth and property of others in the village or in the forest. Abandoning misconduct in sensual pleasures, he abstains from misconduct in sensual pleasures. He does not have intercourse with women who are protected by their mother, father, mother and father, brother, sister, or relatives who have a husband, who are protected by law, or with those who are garlanded in token of betrothal. That is how there are three kinds of bodily conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct. And how, householders, are there four kinds of verbal conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct? Here someone, abandoning false speech, abstains from false speech. When summoned to a court or to a meeting or to his relative's presence or to his guild or to the royal family's presence and questioned as a witness thus, "So, good man, tell what you know." Not knowing, he says, "I do not know." Or knowing, he says, "I know." Not seeing, he says, "I do not see." Or seeing, he says, "I see." He does not in full awareness speak falsehood for his own ends, or for another's ends, or for some trifling worldly end. Abandoning malicious speech, he abstains from malicious speech. He does not repeat elsewhere what he has heard here, in order to divide those people from these. Nor does he repeat to these people what he has heard elsewhere, in order to divide these people from those. Thus he is one who reunites those who are divided, a promoter of friendships, who enjoys concord, rejoices in concord, delights in concord, a speaker of words that promote concord. Abandoning harsh speech, he abstains from harsh speech. He speaks such words as are gentle, pleasing to the ear, and lovable, as go to the heart, are courteous, desired by many, and agreeable to many. Abandoning gossip, he abstains from gossip. He speaks at the right time, speaks what is fact, speaks on what is good, speaks on the Dhamma and the discipline. At the right time, he speaks such words as are worth recording, reasonable, moderate, and beneficial. That is how there are four kinds of verbal conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct. And how, householders, are there three kinds of mental conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct? Here someone is not covetous. He does not covet the wealth and property of others thus. Oh, may what belongs to another be mine. His mind is without ill will, and he has intentions free from hate thus. May these beings be free from enmity, affliction, and anxiety. May they live happily. He has right view, undistorted vision, thus. There is what is given, and what is offered, and what is sacrificed. There is fruit and result of good and bad actions. There is this world and the other world. There is mother and father. There are beings who are reborn spontaneously. There are good and virtuous recluses and Brahmins in the world who have themselves realized by direct knowledge and declare this world and the other world. That is how there are three kinds of mental conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct. So, householders, it is by reason of such conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, by reason of such conduct, that some beings here, on the dissolution of the body, after death, reappear in a happy destination, even in the heavenly world. If, householders, one who observes conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct, should wish, oh, that on the dissolution of the body, after death, I might reappear in the company of well-to-do nobles. It is possible that, on the dissolution of the body after death, he will reappear in the company of well-to-do nobles. Why is that? Because he observes conduct that is in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct. Then the Buddha goes through that if one makes that, say that aspiration or that grounded oneself in that which is in accord with the Dhamma, and making that aspiration to reappear in the company of well-to-do Brahmins, well-to-do householders, or in the heaven of the four great kings, and the heaven of the 33, and the heaven of the Yama gods, and be with the gods of the Dusita heaven, in the plane of the gods who delight in creating, or the gods who wield power over others' creations, through the different Brahma realms of the, say, Brahma's retinue, gods of radiance, gods of limited radiance, immeasurable radiance, streaming radiance, and so on, through all the different spheres. It is possible that on the dissolution of the body after death, he will reappear in the company of the gods of neither perception nor non-perception. Why is that? Because he observes conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct. If, householders, one who observes conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct, should wish, oh, that by realizing for myself with direct knowledge, I might here and now enter upon and abide in the deliverance of mind and deliverance by wisdom that are taintless with the destruction of the taints. It is possible that by realizing for himself with direct knowledge, he will here and now enter upon and abide in the deliverance of mind and deliverance by wisdom that are taintless with the destruction of the taints. Why is that? Because he observes conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct. And of course the Brahmins of Sala are suitably impressed and go to him for refuge.
Okay.